Time for us to talk a little Boston sports. To do that, we welcome in Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. And if you want to know how much sway Chad Finn has, yesterday was his birthday, and I feel like the Patriots and Jets got together and said, let's gift Chad with a game for the ages. Am I right on that?
I would have rather had like a pizza for dinner or something like that. that's what I wished for. But I guess the last 26 seconds made up for the 59-34 before that game.
Well, first of all, happy belated birthday.
Thanks. Yeah, no complaints at all. We're actually having dinner at Pat's Pizza down here in Scarborough, not the original, but little callback to Orono days anyway.
Oh, that's nice. I like that a lot. Well, I actually woke up. It's hard to believe anybody could doze off in that game. It was so compelling. So I missed, I don't know, maybe half of the 17 punts, but I woke up in time to see that last one. So good timing on my part.
I had to write about it, so I couldn't take a nap. And I'm really worried about Thursday if I eat a lot of turkey and then have to write about that game afterwards. That may be the one where I get my naps in, even if there's points scored. But, yeah, that was ugly to watch. I think probably the one thing that made Patriots fans feel pretty good in the second half as things developed was that you really got a sense the Jets weren't going to score unless there was some sort of fluke, unless Patriots offense made a mistake or, you know, Zach Wilson threw one up for grabs that Garrett Wilson made a play on or something like that, because their offense was just a mess. We've seen some bad quarterback play and frustrating quarterback play this season here, but nothing like what the Jets fans have to deal with Wilson. And that team's got a lot of talent, but until they fix that, they're gonna keep losing games like they did yesterday.
Yeah, and again, Bill Belichick's ability to seemingly get inside the head of young quarterbacks. What was it, 2 total yards in the second half?
Yeah, I saw a breakdown. It was like 3.6 inches per play or something like that. They really should have gone just to a kid, but not really. Throw it up for grabs offense and let Wilson heave a couple downfield and see if one of those talented receivers could make a play, because they weren't running the ball, and their cautious approach, which they should generally take with him, wasn't working either. It's not going to happen with him. He's arrogant. They took him with the number 2 pick overall because he had dynamic physical ability. But when they use that physical ability, that's when he makes his biggest mistakes. When a play breaks down and he scrambles, that's when he does the really dumb stuff. And he hasn't shown any inclination to be a game manager. So if the Jets want to make the playoffs and be in that mix with the Bills and Dolphins and Patriots, they probably should play a different quarterback. And made you feel pretty good about where the Patriots are watching those guys yesterday.
And boy, if they played the Jets every week, Matthew Judon would finish the season with about 30 sacks.
What does he have now, 13?
13 and a half, I think, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he got a shared one yesterday. And it's funny, I noticed in the previous game, he kind of let up on a play to let Uche get one. He could have gotten there first and let Uche pick up one of his 3 in that game. So Judon's playing so well that he's actually being generous with some of his accomplishments. But that's shaping up to be one of the best free agent signings in Patriots history. I think would probably put Stephon Gilmore up there. A bunch of the guys they signed, in the early 2000s, Rodney Harrison. But he's an absolute bargain for what he's given the defense, and they've been really wise with him this year and resting him and keeping his snap count fairly low. And hopefully that means he's going to continue to play at this level the rest of the season and won't kind of fade out like he did last year.
I was stunned in reading your piece today to see that Mac Jones threw for 246 yards. Now, admittedly, I was in and out of consciousness, but every time I opened my eyes, they were going backwards.
Yeah, it was frustrating because they actually did improve on offense, especially when you think about what a mishmash the line became over the game with Wynn and David Andrews getting hurt again pretty seriously, it sounds, on Orlando Brown. Trent Brown wasn't feeling very, very good, so he was in and out. But they moved the ball. I mean, they hit some chunk plays, the 26-yarder to Jonnu Smith, Damian Harris had a 30-yard. Stevenson had that great 19-yard play down the sideline where he ran third and 17, third and 18, where he broke a bunch of tackles. So there were some good things that happened, but the frustrating thing is, at least on three series, probably more than that, they would get into a good spot and just retreat. There would be a couple of runs that went nowhere, and then Mac would get buried on third down. And that happened twice, where it took Bulk out of field goal range, and he missed a 43-yarder and a 44-yarder. Non-windy day probably makes them, but the offense kind of let the kicker down in those situations. So they got to clean it up in the red zone, and I'm not sure that's possible with the state of the line. We'll see.
Yeah, what do you do this week? It's a thigh injury to Andrews, and as you said, it doesn't look very good. How do you patch that group together?
Yeah, it's tough because, they got Kajus, the right tackle, with Cannon on IR, and he's not a starting player. Unwenu's a rock, but he's really your most dependable guy there. Brown's been in and out health-wise this year. Pretty good after the opener against the Dolphins, but just wasn't right yesterday. Strange has gotten benched a couple of times as he figures things out. And, Ference is a replacement-level player. You can plug him in at a couple of spots, and he'll be solid for you. But against the Quinn and Williamses of the world, he's going to be in trouble. And that's a pretty big blow, because I think David Andrews was a really good influence on Strange and kind of put him in the right spots a couple of times, as well as doing the job at center really well. So that one hurts, and it's going to be interesting to see how they overcome it.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Well, they get a Thursday night showdown with the Vikings, who, after looking so great last week, had nothing yesterday against the Cowboys. Does this make it a good time or a bad time to play Minnesota?
Well, I've been playing fantasy football for a long time, and I've never had a quarterback with -7 points like
Kirk
Cousins.
Wow.
Yesterday, taking points off the board. So I don't think it went well for him. That game was weird because Dallas blew that game to the Packers last week, and you kind of thought Dallas might be the one that started in a little bit of a slide here. Instead, they just tormented the Vikings and Cousins all day. And Vikings have similar offensive line issues to what the Patriots are dealing with. So I tend to think as explosive as Minnesota's offense can be with Justin Jefferson, Dalvin Cook, Thielen in a secondary role, I think the Patriots are going to be in Cousins' face all day, and we'll see if they can make any plays. But I'm kind of confident about how the defense fares against him. I'm just not sure what we're going to get, because we just don't know week to week from the Patriots' offense.
Well, while we're focused on the Patriots getting themselves back into the playoff hunt here, the Celtics are playing great. Best record in the league at 13-3, and back at it again tonight on the road against the Chicago Bulls. What's been the key to their success?
I think it's Luke Kornet's team, Rich. I think that, we all agree there.
Oh, yeah.
You know what the big thing with them is? Some of the Celtics actually pointed this out to me last week, and I hadn't thought of it that way, but they haven't had Rob Williams, but when they do, their top eight players are all excellent on both ends of the court. These are two-way guys. And then they look at it as their number nine player is Hauser, who's just a killer shooter, and 10 is Peyton Pritchard, who would start for some teams in the league. So they just have incredible quality depth. And beyond that, they can rest guys or sit guys out with minor injuries because they're competent players to fill in. Smart misses two games. Derek White starts and Brogdon comes back from his injury, and it looks like they've been playing together for a long time. It's just really good players who seem to really like playing with each other. And everything I've seen from this team this year makes me think they're a championship contender.
Well, and you mentioned the bench, too, and the difference I've seen is Joe Mazzulla's willingness to use that bench, and Ime Udoka often would try to keep it to about 7 or 8 guys, and that was it.
Yeah, I think that was because they put themselves in that 18-20 hole last year. Mm. So when they got, when they really got hot and rolling, and as Jaylen Brown put it at the time, the energy shifted, he kind of had to step on the gas because they had so much ground to make up in the Eastern Conference to get to a spot they wanted to be by the time the playoffs rolled around. With Mazzulla, I think you can kind of pace things a little bit and rest guys when you need to. It's what Jim Montgomery's doing with the Bruins, too, because they got off to such a great start here that you can get guys a little bit of rest while everything else is rolling. And I've also kind of come around on Mazzulla. You know, he lets them play through timeouts, and it can be frustrating in the moment, but I think it's going to situations where you should call a timeout when they're struggling. But I think it's really going to benefit them to go through those battles. And I suspect he will use those timeouts if he needs to when the games get tougher postseason or whatever. But right now he's letting them work out their own problems. And I think that's really going to help in the long run.
You mentioned the Bruins, a historic start for them, 16-2, the best start for anybody in the league since the 1929-30 Bruins, who I barely remember from my youth. But what a great night it was last week, and I thought it would get more play up here. Jim Montgomery and John Tortorella going head-to-head.
Yeah, I think people are down on Montgomery because he's got two losses this year. We're used to him having only one in a season up in Maine, so kind of disappointing. No, it's been great. Actually, I met him for lunch last week. I'm doing a story on him for the UMaine Alumni Magazine, and it's really good to catch up with him because he's got really sharp, fond memories of those days and days on Alphonse, and said he has a text thread with all the guys who are seniors with him where they kind of bust each other's chops every 2 or 3 days a week, a couple of times a week, and he said every once in a while one of them will say to him, "Do you believe you're the coach of the Bruins?" And he's like, "No, not really." But, you know, Bruce Cassidy was such a popular figure here and a well-liked coach by the fans, and kind of been forgotten about because Montgomery's gotten off to such a terrific start and, you know, made people realize he's a pretty darn good coach himself.
Yeah, and he's been very open about his struggles, but also you talk about a guy taking advantage of getting a second chance.
Yeah, I mean, he talks about that. He doesn't like to go into detail, understandably, because he has before, but and you don't want to just keep going over and over it, but he just says he's a better person now, and he's learned a lot, and I think you got to give him the benefit of the doubt because it seems like he's done everything right since then. He went to the Blues and became a really valuable part of their coaching staff, and I think you have to give the Bruins credit. They've done some things wrong lately, Don Sweeney, but you got to give him credit for giving Jimmy a second chance and for recognizing that there's a really talented coach out there that if he has things in the right order in his life could really help help out the team.
Now, should we expect sometime in the next, 48 hours to find out that Chaim Bloom has tracked down Aaron Judge for a special Thanksgiving get-together?
Like the old Schilling and Theo thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's a better chance they sign a lefty with a 4.80 ERA that has a history with the Rays, but I don't know who that would be. It's got to be somebody out there, but yeah, it's been kind of slow. With the shortstops, I don't know if they'll be in on Aaron Judge other than requisite checking in, but the shortstops I think are really interesting because that whole group, Correa, Trey Turner, Bogarts, and to a lesser degree, Dansby Swanson, seem to all be waiting for the first chip to fall for somebody to set the bar so they can try to exceed it. So we'll see who goes where, but wouldn't shock me if Bogarts were the first to sign. He seems like somebody who probably wants to get this process done with and find out where he's going to be playing next year.
And isn't it interesting that Dave Dombrowski seems to be quite interested?
I would have thought he would have given him 15 years and $400 million by now. It seems like his mode of operation. But I feel like that's legitimate. And he's got the cherry on top of sticking it to the Red Sox if he does end up signing him and sticking it to his successor because you look back now, and Dombrowski gave out some bad contracts for sure that hamstrung some things, but did a pretty darn good job here otherwise, and didn't deplete the farm system to the degree that he gets accused of. He traded the right guys, generally.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe with us here on Downtown. Chad, great talking with you as always. Hope you and the family have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll catch you again in a couple of weeks.
Same to you, Rich. Have a great Thanksgiving.